Welcome to Behind the Game, the Kids in the Game official podcast, where we cover the intersection of youth development, sports, education, and technology in the New York City landscape.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 9 of Behind the Game, Kids in the Game official podcast. This is Paul O'Connor. On this episode, we were joined by Meredith Whitley, who is an associate professor at Adelphi University, and Amanda Borby, who leads our program design and evaluation here at Kids in the Game. Awesome episode. We talked through all things sports-based youth development. So without further ado, give it a listen here. Okay, we are now joined by Meredith Whitley. Meredith, thanks so much for coming by and being on the podcast. I know you had a busy day yesterday with some of our other colleagues, but before we get into that, for the audience that does not know who you are, give them a brief rundown on your background and what brings you here today.
Sure.
Which is a long background, I know.
I can do a quick overview. So, let's see here. So, originally from Virginia. I grew up playing all different kinds of sports, largely soccer and basketball.
Cool. Are you Virginia or Virginia Tech or VCU? Where's your fandom?
My basketball team?
Yes.
Duke.
Oh my God. Let's go.
Yeah?
Let's go.
All right.
This is going to be the best podcast we've done.
Great.
This is awesome.
So
good for
Duke.
You.
Nice. So I try to go to a game every year. So this is good. This is good because we could have gone UNC and then
then we would have cut the podcast. It would have been over.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Can I say that then? And I can go and like.
No, you can't. that was your out. Unfortunately, we're both Duke fans, so here we are.
I grew up Duke, but I grew up playing sports. Ended up coming up to get my degree at New York University in the city, and played basketball there for a bit, and so that was excellent. Got a degree in history.
How was that?
Wonderful.
Okay.
Kind of fascinating. I mean, I think you learn how to read, you learn how to think critically, you learn how to write. And while I was in the city, I took advantage of all the different opportunities. And so I had different sports internships and just kind of figuring out what I was really interested in and not so interested in. So
gotcha.
It was a good experience. Right after that, I coached at the college level for basketball for a year. I figured out that I loved working with and connecting with college-age students, and then also in the sports field, and so started to figure out how to make a career in that. I didn't think that college coaching was exactly for me, and so started to learn more and more about the sports psychology field, got really passionate and excited about that, moved to Boston, and over the next 2 years got my degree in counseling, the specialization in sports psychology at Boston University. While I was there, I started to dive into individual consulting, team consulting, just really focusing on performance enhancement. But I also got my first taste of sport-based youth development. And so I started working in a specific school with a sport-based youth development program being led by Dr. John McCarthy at Boston University. And that was my first taste of, I think I want to do this. This is pretty exciting and different. Really love connecting with the kids and thinking just about transforming lives and helping change communities through sports. And in that experience, it was in the school system itself.
Gotcha.
Which is really interesting. So from there, figured out that I was still interested in sports psychology and in sport-based youth development, was figuring out next steps, possible career options. I found out about an incredible PhD opportunity at Michigan State, and so that took me there, and so I ended up studying there for 4 years to get my PhD in the psychosocial aspects of sport and physical activity, I think is the official name, but basically sports psychology.
Yep.
And studied under Dr. Dan Gould there at the Institute for the Study of Youth Sports. And through that time, learned and continued working on the sports psychology side, but most of my research was all focused in sport-based youth development. I started up a refugee sport club while I was there, getting undergraduate and graduate students involved in designing and delivering sport-based programs for refugee children and youth in the Lansing area. Had two different experiences in the summers in South Africa and conducting research and designing, programming, and collaborating with a local nonprofit organization there to deliver programming in a specific township in the Western Cape. Ended up doing my dissertation focused on a specific program out in California, and collecting data there, focusing on sport-based youth development as well. And so a lot of my programming and research were all in sport-based youth development. And so when I graduated from Michigan State as a Spartan, was figuring out next steps and just got really fortunate in that Adelphi had an open position. They had leadership in their department for years and years who was really focused on, and a number of faculty focused on, the potential for sport to do more, not just in physical education, but more broadly than that. And the timing at that point was really right for turning that interest into more of a formal academic area of study. And so I was hired in 2012. And in that first year, worked within the department with different colleagues and across the university and starting up a specialization in sport-based youth development, and have been overseeing that for the past 6.5 years, which has been great. And then also along the way, along with overseeing that, advising students, teaching in that area, both in Garden City and in Manhattan, I've been doing all kinds of research and programming as well, in the US and globally. So that's brief overview.
Awesome. For people who grew up playing sports, the research that you're doing for me personally, just seems painfully obvious. It's obvious that sports teaches you life lessons. It's obvious that the benefits that you get out of sports. So it's a two-part question. One, what is the origin of sports-based youth development? When did this start? When did someone finally say, we need to put a name to this, or we need to put evidence behind it? Well, answer that first. When did it happen?
To write a few things down and keep going.
Was it a person, an idea, a program?
Well, I think it's been there for many, many, many years, right? You think about even just the start of the Olympic Games and the ideas that sport is incredibly powerful and can be incredibly beneficial, not just for those who participate, but for those who are in the community and supporting those athletes. And so you even have reports of, I think during the Olympics, wars would stop, right? And the athletes would have safe travel to the Olympics and be able to compete. But I think what we've seen is over the past 20 years or so, it's become more of a formal academic field. I think that the term sport-based youth development is still debated. It's used quite a bit in the U.S. More globally, it's typically referred to as sport for development or sport for development and peace. I think in the psychology domain, it's more typically referred to as positive youth development through sport. I mean, so I think we're still going through a little bit of an identity crisis of just trying to figure out who we are. We have many different disciplines that are contributing to sport-based youth development, to the programming, to the research in this, and I think we're still figuring out what we want to call ourselves, what that includes. But I think we're getting closer and closer to that point. I think how it's gotten a lot more momentum over the past 20 years, and I think you're seeing more and more of that each year that passes, is I think there's getting more and more support from the United Nations, from non-governmental organizations, governing bodies. There's more and more funders that are starting to recognize the potential for sport to be used as a tool to achieve different developmental outcomes. And so I think you're seeing growing interest in that because of those overarching interests and support from that. So I think you're starting to see it become more of a formal field because of that. However, I do, and we can get into this perhaps later, but I think the growing evidence base, if there is a growing evidence base, is it a high quality evidence base? I think we still have a long way to go. And my colleague Amanda here has been on some different reviews of research, and I think we've found that we know a bit, but I think that oftentimes in programming and in even the research that we conduct, we have that core assumption that sport is inherently good, that you can learn from sport experiences. And what we've learned, and scholars have said this for years, but then what the research is starting to support now, is that this doesn't always happen, right? I can point to incredibly negative experiences I've had from sport. Mm-hmm. Many, many others can. A colleague of mine, Dr. Will Massey out at Oregon State, and I have been doing research over the past 6 or 7 years that is tracking former athletes' experiences through sport who've had incredibly positive experiences and they have transformed their lives, and then incredibly negative experiences who are still trying to overcome those. And so I think it's trying to figure out what about sport can be really beneficial. How do we best design sport so that it can maximize the good and minimize the bad? And I think the research isn't there to help us figure out what is working.
Is the positive and negative experience directly related to the coach?
Partially.
Okay.
But many other things.
Gotcha.
But yeah, the coach is a huge part. Yep.
Okay. Sticking on the research part, you were the head of research for the Sport for Development, the Road to Evidence report and project. I can't lie to you, I read 3 of the pages last night.
Great.
I had to reread them. so that's why I couldn't read all 7. But I read them twice. And I have my, a couple of different parts that stuck out to me. But, what stuck out to you or maybe surprised you kind of in that research project and maybe something that you didn't see coming?
Sure. So just to give a brief overview, that was a project that was conceptualized by the Laureus Sport for Good Foundation, which is based in London, and the Commonwealth Secretariat in the UK is based in the UK as well. And they asked us to assess the quality of evidence and research on sport for development interventions in 6 specific cities around the world. And so through that, what we learned is that in general, the quality of evidence and research isn't very good. Also, we were looking not just at academic articles that are in peer-reviewed publications and dissertations and theses, but we were also looking at gray literature, annual reports, research reports, things coming from the organizations themselves. And so we tried to be as inclusive as possible. We looked at quantitative and qualitative methods, mixed methods. But despite being as inclusive as possible with the different records that we were looking at, it was really hard to find really solid research that then could help us understand what's the most effective processes, mechanisms, methods for sport for development programs to be most effective and reach specific outcomes and what doesn't work, and then how do we move the field forward. So I think one of the perhaps not most surprising things, findings from this research, but something that we have been critiquing the field for a while but didn't have this type of systematic review conducted yet, was just that we were pretty sure this was the case, but just the quality of evidence. We have a long way to go as researchers, as measurement and evaluation specialists and colleagues who are working in the field with organizations, that we have a long way to go to fully understanding what is working and what isn't and next steps that we need to take. I think that, some surprising pieces of information that came out, I think that there was under-reporting by far of null and negative outcomes. It makes sense. If you think about organizations, they're relying on funding from donors, from foundations, from governments, and so they can be hesitant to want to report null or negative findings. But then how do we learn what didn't work? How do we continue improving? And so I think we were thinking about kind of one of the next steps from this is how do we create a climate where organizations and programs and the researchers who are working with them or helping them feel comfortable to report what isn't working, and to create a learning focused climate, and maybe have longer funding cycles, maybe have stronger relationships with funders, just a really huge focus on just learning and improvement. And so really focusing on the learning piece when you think about measurement, evaluation, and learning, focusing on that learning piece and giving a lot of value to it. So yeah, I think that was one of the perhaps more surprising outcomes from it.
One thing that I picked up on and I would have disagreed with this prior to obviously the entire report coming out, but the one thing that stuck out to me was there's no evidence that sport for development is more impactful in one part of the world than the other. So I would have said, no, if you have a great facility and great coaches and access all the time, how could you not have a better experience? How did you guys come about that? Was it just from the cities and being in there and seeing the programs and the results? Is that kind of how you...
So it was based on the research that we had from those cities, right? So that's not comprehensive across the entire world, but it's focused on those specific cities and the reports and the articles that we had access to that were being published. And so it was just limited for those. But I think a follow-up question I would have would be, where in the world does everyone have access to all resources, to facilities, to great coaches who are trained in not just sport skill development, but sport-based youth development as well, and who are connected with families and school systems and neighborhoods, and where is that happening?
In your opinion, what city, and if New York City is one of them, that's great. I just learned that there's 140 SBYD organizations here in New York.
That's a lot.
Never would have guessed that. But is NYC leading the way in this space, or is there another city that we don't know about that's kind of crushing it?
How do you define leading the way?
I would say 140 organizations is certainly a statement that everyone else is kind of on board and seeing the power behind it. So that's one. Then to your point, like, is the DOE seeing it? Is Laureus seeing it? Are there other organizations that are supporting it? That's my small two cents.
Totally. I mean, I think that the question is, I don't know if we fully answered the question in terms of, you know, are we being as impactful? Are we the most impactful city in the world with sport for development? Are we the most active? One of the most active? Yes, definitely. I think we're one of the most active. I don't have the exact numbers of the different sport-based youth development organizations in cities around the world, but I think New York City is one of the most active. And I think what is really exciting is because of that, we have some different groups in the city that are trying to best support those organizations. I mean, thinking about Up to Us Sports, thinking about the Laureus Sport for Good Foundation USA, thinking about Vita Sports Partners. I mean, there's different groups here in the city who I think are trying to figure out the best ways to support, promote, and help organizations do the best that they can to not duplicate the wheel that already exists, to try to share information, share knowledge, collaborate with one another. And ideally, I mean, I think the next step for us is thinking about how to advocate for the field more broadly. And so I think hopefully that's something that we're going to think about moving forward in the future. But yeah, I think, you know, there's incredible resources and opportunities and groups here. And I think we just, as a field, need to think about how to come together and best use those.
All right, so my question is, when you think about different organizations, what is the biggest challenge you think that they face, whether it's funding or their coaching? And then after that, if they can face those challenges, what is the biggest potential for success that you see in their impact and just the direction that they're going?
Okay, so I'm going to focus on the first part, and then maybe you repeat the second question. I think the biggest challenge is, I think there's still climate and a culture in nonprofits, and not just, I'm not saying this is driven by the nonprofits, but I think it's a reaction to the overall norms and climate in the funding landscape, that having really, really qualified people focusing in specific areas that can help your program and organization succeed perhaps should not be the priority for the organization. And so I think that you see money that is only targeted for specific parts of that organization, direct service, you know, so for specific pieces of that. And then you have staff who are trying to take on multiple jobs, who are trying to, you know, perhaps they haven't been trained on the funding and grant writing and fundraising side, but that's, and it's not part of the formal job description, but they find themselves 20% of the time trying to help the organization in that area. Or they're not the person who's charged with overseeing, designing, and implementing the measurement, evaluation, and learning plan. But, you know, they're trying to design that for their specific part of the program or for a whole component of the organization. And that can be really, really challenging. And I think, you know, in the end of the day, you know, you had asked earlier, is it, are high quality sport-based youth development organizations, is that mostly driven by the quality of the coaches, right? The direct service providers. I mean, I think at the end of the day, it comes down to just having incredibly talented, driven, amazing people. And that isn't just those who are directly serving the youth, the community. So it includes your coaches, your youth development mentors, your teachers, your tutors, your volunteers. But it also includes the individuals who are in charge of onboarding those individuals, the people who are in charge of leading the measurement, evaluation, and learning, people are in charge of the fundraising, people are in charge of overseeing partnerships, people who are designing their curricula. So I think that includes all of that, and I think sometimes that can be really hard to advocate for and get funding for and get support for, and an organization just feels really strapped to figure out how to make it work, and that's hard. And so I think that's a huge limitation. And I think if we can figure out how to best support the people who are running these organizations, the organizations are just going to then continue to improve, and they're going to be able to invest in the kids a lot more. It's going to be more impactful. And I can repeat some of that if you need me to because of the siren.
No, it's okay. It's not New York if there's no siren in the background of the podcast. What about the Adelphi program specifically?
Yeah.
How was that always there, or did you help create that when 6 years ago when you got there?
Yep. So when I got there about 6 years ago, the timing was just kind of great. There's a lot of interest and support in creating more of a formal academic program focused on sport-based youth development. And so during that first year, I collaborated with different colleagues across the university and within our department and created this sport-based youth development specialization. And I think what's really nice is that it's an option for students either earning their master's degree in sport management or in physical education, and within that they're able to specialize in and learn about sport-based youth development. And it's been really exciting. About, I think we're in our fourth year now of academic programming here in Manhattan at Adelphi's Manhattan Center, and then we're in our sixth year programming in Garden City. And what's been really exciting about opening up this opportunity in Manhattan is that this is, like you said, there's 140 sport for development programs and organizations in New York City. This is where the action is, right? And so that's been a huge resource for us. We're able to have site visits, we're able to bring in guest lectures, have adjunct professors, just have all of this access to experts, to programs. And so the students are able to have these really wonderful experiential learning opportunities, really wonderful connections with experts leading in the field, and that's been a huge resource. So it's been a lot of fun to come here in Manhattan as well as continue out in Garden City.
Okay, so my question, as an alumni of the Adelphi program, both in Garden City and in Manhattan, so I kind of was there from the beginning of it, that program changed the direction of my career and into this field. So my question to you is, where do you see that program at Adelphi, either the fellowship or just the general program in Garden City, going? Like, what is your dream and vision of that program?
Well, first, I'll try not to cry because that just makes me so happy. I hope I hear of more stories like that. Right. I mean, I think ultimately I got into this field and, you know, continued on the trajectory of staying as a teacher, first and foremost, because I love working with and supporting college and graduate students and finding their paths in life, whether that's in sport-based youth development or in a related field or something totally different. And so the more that we can do that, then the happier I am. So first and foremost, if we can continue doing that moving forward, and sport-based youth development is part of that, and helping students figure out what they want to do in life and giving them that support, then my heart is happy, and that would be amazing. I think academically, I think we have a really unique partnership here in New York City. I think that, so to give a brief overview, we have this academic sport-based youth development specialization that's an option for master's degree students in Manhattan. And like I said before, they get their degree either in sport management or physical education and specialize in sport-based youth development. And then if they're selected for the sport-based youth development fellowship, they work part-time with SBYD organizations in and around New York City for 2 years, gain incredible experience in the fields that they are able to apply the learning they have in the classroom in their everyday practice. And in exchange, they're getting their tuition covered, which I think has the potential, and I've seen, unlock graduate education opportunities for many different students. And I hope we'll continue to do that. I think it makes it much more accessible and feasible, and that has been really incredible to watch. And so I hope we can continue that. And then we've been able to now partner with organizations who are walking the walk, who are figuring out how to use sport during recess time, in the physical education classroom, during the after-school environment, in community-based programs and organizations to transform the lives of the kids they're working with and transform the communities. And so we've been able to partner with Kids in the Game. We've been able to partner with Wellness in the Schools, with Beauty Sports Partners, with Play Rugby USA, with these different organizations where students are getting this practical experience. And learning and improving and hopefully finding their path in life. And that's incredible. I love it. And so I hope we can continue the partnerships into the future. I think that just here at Kids in the Game, you know, I think the students are learning and applying, and I hope that they are helping Kids in the Game as well. And I hope we can continue to learn from these fellowship experiences to figure out how to continue improving them, and that we can have a long-term partnership, because I think that it's filling a gap, and it presents a really exciting opportunity that, quite frankly, I think is quite rare in higher education right now.
Thanks so much for giving us Amanda. She's been fantastic.
You're welcome. This is really hard to let go.
One last serious question, and then a fun question, and then we will set you free. And I'm going to steal this from the Q&A. But what is the next steps for the Road to Evidence? Are you guys going to do that again in 6 new cities? The actual question is, how will Laureus Sport for Good Foundation and the Commonwealth take forward their commitment to this research and to further developing the evidence base for the SFD approach?
Yes. So I'll talk more broadly just about next steps for the field. I mean, so what we did was, after the 6 city systematic review that you referenced, the USA Foundation for Laureus reached out and said, this is incredibly interesting. We're interested in you doing the same thing, but throughout the United States. And so we dove right back in. We decided one systematic review wasn't enough. And so we dove right back in and we did a second one and assessed the quality of research and evidence on sport for development organizations or sport-based youth development organizations throughout the United States. And so those findings are now out as well. We found similar things. In terms of the quality of evidence and next steps that we need to take, and we learned some different things as well. I think that as we think from those two specific systematic reviews, what I'm the most focused on and the most excited about is, I mean, I think first and foremost, I think that just in general, we as researchers, as measurement and evaluation specialists and professionals in the field, I think we all need to just commit to more rigorous research that's looking at all evidence, whether that can possibly lead to negative or null outcomes or positive outcomes, that focuses on trying to understand the mechanisms of the program and connecting those with specific outcomes rather than just focusing on the outcomes themselves and trying to figure out what is working, what isn't, and then ideally sharing all of those results. I think there's a need then for all of us to commit to a learning-focused environment, and that includes policymakers, that includes funders, because otherwise that's not going to happen if they don't commit to that as well. I think along with that, we, and I say all that in recognizing that that is going to be really hard. And I've been down that same path. My research was critiqued in this as well. And I think that even if it's hard, that doesn't mean that we shouldn't do it. And figuring out how do we start to argue for and advocate for more support from funders to more support from policymakers to make this a priority so that we know how to move forward. Because if the quality of evidence isn't high, and that's what we're basing our recommendations on, you know, ultimately 5, 10, 15 years down the line, you know, we could be doing our whole field a huge disservice if people are getting behind it and then ultimately they find that it's not really having the true impact we're claiming. What's going to happen to the field at that point? So I think that's concerning. I think the other piece that I'm really, really focusing on now is I think there's a need for all of us in sport-based youth development to embrace more systems thinking. So I think rather than focusing on an individual program or individual participants in that program, I think that we need to start to think more broadly about how do our programs connect with the school system? How do our programs connect with the families? How do our programs connect with the neighborhoods and all the different individuals and groups and programs and organizations that our kids are going through and connecting with, and try to understand how we fit into that system. And looking at downstream influences, you know, 5, 10, 15 years down the line, thinking about longitudinal outcomes, what outcomes are our kids really having? And are any of those, can any of those be causally linked back to us? And if not, that's okay. Just trying to understand our role in that as much as possible. Are there negative outcomes that are ultimately happening down the line based on what we're doing in our specific program? And how can we better connect with all the different individuals and groups in kids' lives and to try to understand what's happening and try to understand how we can all work together to maximize their options and help them cultivate their own paths in life that make them happy and healthy and contributing citizens moving forward.
Awesome. You're free. You did it. For everyone in this world and everyone not in this world, you need to follow her on Twitter. It's Dr. Whitley, W-H-I-T-L-E-Y. So let's get your follower count up.
Oh, yeah.
Last question.
Yes.
Favorite New York City restaurant and favorite New York City slice of pizza?
Favorite New York City restaurant would be Yasuda.
Ooh, new
which
one.
Is a sushi place.
Ah, okay.
Like Midtown East.
Okay.
It's incredible. Sit at the sushi bar.
Is there a particular order people should get?
I think just get, they have like something that's, it's a version
of massive boats or something?
No. It's a version of omakase, but it ends up being, I think, less than $30. And just let the sushi chef choose.
Nice.
And
awesome.
And you go with what they choose.
Okay.
It's incredible. So
very
I strongly
cool.
recommend that. Favorite slice of pizza, I would say when I was a long time ago NYU student, it was always Ben's Pizzeria that was down the street from my dorm right on Washington Square Park. So that was always a solid one for late nights. I think now it would probably be Grimaldi's.
Okay.
Which is
a classic answer.
Yes.
Classic and safe.
Yes. And yeah, that would be it.
Awesome. Well, Meredith, thank you so much for coming on. This was amazing. I don't think I've said this yet, but probably our best guest. So sorry to everyone else. Did great. This was awesome. Again, follow her on Twitter, Dr. Whitley, W-H-I-T-L-E-Y. And we'll be in touch soon. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Behind the Game. Make sure to subscribe in the iTunes store and be sure to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Kids in the Game NY and Facebook at Kids in the Game NYC.